What's up, Cub fans? This is Ryan Davis back with the second episode of Locked On Cubs, episode two, Attack of the Winter Meetings, if you will. With my first ever guest, Evan Altman of CubsInsider.com, a good friend of mine. What's up, Evan?
Hey, what's happening? I'm having a great old time with the winter meetings and various sundry goings on. So it's been fun.
Yeah, same thing for me. It's been a jam-packed week. Just sitting in my basement, as every good baseball writer does, next to my Christmas tree, and just podcasting. Podcasting is such a basement thing, right?
I kind of feel like that's where it's evolved, right? It used to be bloggers were in the basement, and now podcasters have either joined. I don't know if they've displaced bloggers, if we have now risen like up to the upper floors or not, but I suppose that would still, we'd be in mom and dad's way at that point. So I guess we're all still relegated to the basement.
Yeah. It dawned on me. I had to bring up the basement thing because while I was waiting for you to come on, I was actually playing my Super Nintendo Classic, and I was just like, man, I'm playing Super Nintendo games before I wait to go do a baseball podcast in my basement. This is just peak Ryan.
Which is very much that would be kind of the throwback to mom and dad's basement playing the Super Nintendo, right. Which I have got the retro NES original, and actually behind me in the closet lies a Switch, which Santa Claus will be bringing in a couple weeks, which I have been tempted on a couple of occasions to bust out and practice on ahead of time before actually setting it up. But we'll see. We'll see if it makes it.
I'm the super nerd who went on eBay and found the dudes who pre-bought the SNES Classic and then modded it to put like 300 Super Nintendo games on it and then repackaged it and sold it. And I dropped the extra like 50, 60 bucks to have that. And I'm pretty happy with it, except for their controller strings are only like 2 feet long. It's insane. But so you got to be like right up on your big plasma. Anyway, Cubs. We'll go right into the Cubs. I've got two basic full segments. We're going to talk about the Cubs' newest signing, which is left-handed pitcher Drew Smyly. And then we'll talk about some of the other kind of players that they've been rumored with. And then for a final segment, we have a question from the fans. First segment, Drew Smyly, Tommy John surgery, missed all of 2017, spent the last few years with the Rays. From what I understand, he's not going to be ready until mid-2018. Sahadev Sharma of The Athletic tweeted that he'll get $3 million for 2018, $7 million for 2019, with $6 million in incentives to be a starter and $1 million to be a reliever. So I guess that just figures out too. If he's a starter in 2019, he'll get $13 million. And if he's a reliever, he gets $8 million, which seems pretty fair. What do you think of this signing?
You know, it's really interesting because it kind of came out of left field. There'd been some kind of word about it. He was obviously non-tendered as an arbitration-eligible player after having missed all that time. And so, you know, it was kind of out there. But definitely a very, very interesting one when you look at kind of how the Cubs are setting up, what they're sort of looking for, building that depth. And what I really found interesting about it is the timing of it. And the Cubs didn't really know, at least from what we understand, anything about it. But it came, I saw the news of the Smyly signing almost immediately after seeing Ken Rosenthal's tweet that Mike Montgomery is looking for, he wants to start or perhaps be traded out of town to have an opportunity to start. And so I thought we've got a lefty who's kind of a swingman who's excelled in both bullpen and the rotation, who most recently, he never actually pitched in the regular season for the Mariners, but, you know, could assume a bullpen role maybe late this season, but certainly into the future. In a similar role to what Montgomery has filled for the team. I just, it could be total coincidence, right? But I thought that was interesting in that they have a guy who could provide depth for either end of the pitching staff. I think it's a really, really savvy move. And the fact that they're, signing for 2 years is definitely a good one. Was it Scott Baker a few years ago that they signed for $5.5 million for the one season? He only ended up making like three starts and never did anything. So being able to have Smiley under their supervision to help him rehab there in Chicago with the team, be around everything, they'll really get a good gauge of where he's at. And he could be one of those guys that adds depth, like I said, one way or the other. It's kind of I don't know if it's lose if it's no lose, but it's a good deal.
To go kind of speculative on what you said on Montgomery, it gives them options. I don't think this means like, oh, that they're going to trade Montgomery then because they signed this guy. I think maybe they're looking at him as sort of insurance down the road. Tyler Chatwood has history of not pitching lots of innings. In fact, I'd say what was it? His career high in innings was this season, 2017, and it was like 158. So we know he doesn't go out there every 5 days all season and give you 6 or 7 innings. That's not who he is. So there's a good chance that Montgomery makes a lot of starts this year. They could stretch to a 6-man rotation at some point, depending on who's in there. So I think that if he wants to start, the Cubs aren't going to say, well, you're not going to start this year. I think there's a good chance Mike Montgomery starts over 20 games just based on who they have and who they're looking at on the market right now. Obviously that can change depending on who, if they make a big trade for somebody, but I think this sets them up where if they're not 100% on Mike Montgomery, full-time starter, late in 2018 or next off season, they'll have this kind of insurance plan of Drew Smiley. Like, are we going to start him or do we see him as the next Mike Montgomery, the guy who can come out of the bullpen and give you 3 innings or bounce into the rotation?
Yeah, and it's kind of one of these things that's very interesting. When you look at it and think about it, I think a lot of people see, $10 million as much as I think 16, I think would be at the top end, right? If he starts the following season, and people see that like, oh man, for a guy who's only going to play 1 year, but again, you're talking about a guy who, and we've seen kind of this pattern, so far, sort of emerging with the guys that they're. The Cubs are looking at, they're seeing, we're seeing a ton of, now granted, as Tommy John frequency increases, it's kind of inevitable that you're going to sign pitchers who have gone through that. But we're seeing them get a lot of these bounce back candidates, a lot of guys who have been associated with the Rays and Jim Hickey and Joe Maddon. Obviously, Smiley spent some years there in Tampa. So there's this familiarity there. I think a lot of people might look at this and say, man, $10 to $16 million for a guy who's not even going to pitch for a whole season. But when you look at what it gives him in terms of a little bit of security, you sometimes you pay a little bit extra for that, but he's not really gonna, it's not that big a hit, with the guaranteed money. If the next one kicks in, at least for now, it's only $5 million AAV, that'll kick up a little bit, probably to eight. But even then, that's pretty nominal in the grand scheme of things, and they've got some room to work with there, and who knows how things pan out. I like the speculative kind of stuff with it, and I think it, again, worst case scenario, he ends up maybe being a bullpen arm for them in 2019.
I think a lot of people will look at his 2016 and some of the bad numbers from that and kind of project that forward. Just looking real quick, 4.88 ERA and 30 starts, 175 innings. He had a 4.49 FIP. Struck out a decent number. Didn't walk too many, but he allowed 32 home runs. That part's not very good, but this is a guy who was on his way to Tommy John surgery, and I think we could probably rightfully assume that he may have been dealing with elbow problems all year leading up to that. So if you look before that, his numbers with the Tigers and the Rays started 55 games, 126 games total. So he's done the starter and the reliever thing. 3.24 ERA, 3.53 FIP. Much better on the home runs and then still striking out guys and not walking too many. So this is maybe what you can kind of expect him to return to, only add in the extra bump of not pitching in the American League.
Yeah, and I think what's kind of promising too is, and I think that was it, the 13 season, his last full season there in Detroit, he made 60 some appearances for him. So I mean, he's shown some durability there. But I think the other thing, and it could be good, bad, right? Things, everybody comes back differently. No rehab is identical. But I think what's nice is, even for a guy who's missed a bunch of time, we're not talking about the kind of reliever who goes out there and blows guys away, or starter who blows guys away with, you know, mid-90s, upper-90s gas. He's kind of a Kyle Hendricks sort of, you know, 90-mile-an-hour fastball, has a lot of, you know, has some off-speed stuff that he works with. So he's going to have to recover the feel for those pitches, but we're not talking about one of these guys who is bouncing back and maybe, you know, maybe he's lost a couple miles an hour and he's trying to learn how to not be a power pitcher anymore. He never really was. And so how to pitch, and I think that's the kind of thing that really bodes well when you're looking at that and coming in. He's not going to have to, you know, kind of change his whole format for how he goes out on the mound. So, again, I like it for that reason.
Yeah, and before we move on, yeah, just touching on what you said on his 2013, 63 appearances, 76 innings, 2.37 ERA, 2.31 FIP, 9.6 strikeouts per nine, only two walks, and four home runs allowed. So those are all very good numbers as a reliever.
The Cubs have done really well with getting left-handed relievers who did well in Detroit, right? That panned out well the last time, so this is sure to pay off.
I don't know to whom you are talking about.
Justin Wilson, of course. Oh, no. That,
who? I don't recall that name.
Is he still around? Who knows?
Before we go into our second segment, our big promo here. If you have a company that is interested in the sports fan demographic, your company should be sponsoring Locked On Cubs. Our rates are reasonable, so email me at lockedoncubs@gmail.com to find out more. All right, so the Cubs have been tied to a few different players over the last couple of days, some of which I think are extremely legit as serious rumors. Others, I think, are just continuation of constant low-level interest that never goes anywhere, and I think you know who I'm talking about there. So the big one coming into the winter meetings was Alex Cobb, another former Ray. I've written before that I felt like it was a no-brainer that Cobb ends up with the Cubs. I figured it would be done by now. I'm less sure that it's going to happen, but I still feel like that's who they come away with. Other names they've been tied to: Danny Duffy of the Royals, Chris Archer, Christian Yelich. Am I missing anybody?
You know, those seem like, I think, the primary ones. I think, you know, and we saw some relievers being signed today, or at least some names being thrown around in it. And it feels like there's probably 10 other guys who are out there in this relief pitching market is just so incredibly deep. It seems like there's just, you know, throw a bunch of names in a hat and you could pull out two or three pretty good ones and be happy with who you got. And so I think there's, you know, some of the names out there, the Brian Shaws, Addison Reeds, and so on. I think, you know, a few others that have been thrown out. But no, but they're all kind of like, yeah, it's mostly because it's this time of year, like every team is interested in a good available relief pitcher. So you can't really put too much stock in it. Like, well, of course they're interested. Who's not?
Right. Yeah, well, that's, you know, I see people reporting rumors, and not necessarily big beat writers, but, you know, I see, you know, lots of people pop up during the winter meetings trying to report rumors. And as I'm sure you know, and others like us kind of on this bottom rung of baseball reporters, you know, we hear things too, but not everything we hear is legitimate or is really worth reporting. So a lot of times we sit on that stuff. And so I kind of cringe when I see things like the Cubs are interested in Chris Archer, or the Cubs are having conversations with the Rays about Chris Archer. That doesn't necessarily mean that's going anywhere. And I think that stokes a fire that isn't necessarily worth lighting. Do you agree with that, or am I off the mark?
No, I absolutely agree, because you've got sort of this continuum, you know, of baseball reporting, where at one end you've got your Ken Rosenthal's and John Paul Morosi, John Heyman, Buster Olney, and these guys may be wrong from time to time, but they're not, you know, making stuff up, or they're able to vet their sources. They know who these sources are. They know they're legit, and when they put something out there for public consumption, they're pretty certain about it. And then you've got the guys again who are kind of, I think, in our level where you kind of look at that like, okay, I could kind of throw something out here, but I don't really have enough credibility that if I'm wrong on a few of these, that I can really withstand that. And then you got the guys who are just throwing everything out, who are not even saying sources. I've run into a couple of these accounts before, and it's actually kind of hilarious, who are just like, sources tell me, oh, it's a done deal, and all the, that Alex
Yeah.
Cobb already went to the Cubs 4 days ago, like, who are just throwing things out so that when something sticks, they can kind of
Yeah.
blast it out, like, see, I was right. And that's what it makes it kind of difficult, but it is kind of fun, I think. People love this stuff. Like, I found that out over time. People love rumors. And
Yeah.
it's amazing how much they will fall in love with one of these accounts that just is a rumor monger, that doesn't have legitimate sources, but that people will just kind of fall in love with, and they'll follow them for that. So it's easy to fall into that trap as a blogger and like want to just like be Cubs rumor insider all day long and just post that stuff because people eat it up.
Yeah.
But if nothing else, it's kind of fun to take some of those rumors and kind of chew on them a little bit and think like, well, what if, but
Right. It
but for
makes
the
good.
most part, oh, it's tough.
Yeah, it makes good front page fodder when somebody comes up with a rumor, even though it's not necessarily something you would call legit. But yeah, I think about these things and I think who is it coming from? Is there an agenda from the person that's willing to talk to you because they know you're the guy who will tweet anything they tell you just to have, your tweet being retweeted and people following you for rumors. So I think about things like that. And then I also think what you talked about being burned. I was fairly certain and I feel like I got good information and I tweeted last summer that Kyle Schwarber was going to be called up on a certain day, and he was going to be. And Jason McLeod went to Iowa to see him play. And I don't have the specifics on it, but whatever the reason, they made the decision that they were going to wait just a few more days. And so instead of calling him up that day, they called him up, a couple days after. And it kind of made me, I mean, nobody like harangued me over that, but it made me look bad. And I learned my lesson, don't tweet something that you're absolutely certain about, unless, you're absolutely know it's going to happen and you have that credibility, that you can lean on. And so, a lot of that stuff, the winter meeting stuff, I really just take with a grain of salt. That said, is there anybody on this list that we've talked about that specifically jumps out to you as interesting? I'm putting Archer in this group, but I'm just not convinced the Cubs are making this trade.
Yeah, I'm not either. It's one of those that as it goes on, you think, and it's like it's the perpetual trade rumor. I mean, it has like literally since the day they traded him away, is what it feels like, or at least since the time that he got called up and started pitching well for the Rays. It's like people want a do-over on the trade or something like that. They want him back, and obvious, hindsight, and all that, but. I look at it and I just think, well, with the way this team is constructed, does getting Chris Archer, even if we don't add in the factor of who they have to give up, does adding Chris Archer instead of, say, Alex Cobb or whatever, insert other pitcher here, is that addition, that difference big enough to turn the Cubs from, a 90-win team into a 100-win team and World Series favorites? And at least from the way I pursue or perceive it, the answer is a very definitive no. And that's not even assuming, configuring who you have to take out of the mix, be it Albert Almora or Ian Happ or Kyle Schwarber. And so now you're talking about not only the difference, the incremental difference between Archer and whomever he would be kind of replacing, and then the production you would need to replace with the players you trade away. I don't know. By all accounts, the Rays are dangling him, probably not with much intent to actually move him unless somebody really blows him away. I don't see them trading him for anything less than a huge haul. And it doesn't seem like something the Cubs want to do after the trades that they've already made last year that so severely depleted the top end of their farm system for now. It just doesn't fit to me.
Yeah, the key thing I think is that the Rays can negotiate with more teams than the Cubs. And I think fans sometimes kind of, they don't forget it, but it's just kind of like, oh, yay, you know, they're going to negotiate with the Cubs on a trade. But, you know, the Cubs fell to one of the bottom five farm systems in baseball after all the moves that they've made and players that have come up. So you can imagine if the Rays want that big package of prospects of, you know, three legitimate prospects, are the Cubs going to have other teams that can top them? Yeah, they're going to have a ton of other teams that can top anything they can offer. If the Rays want, you know, a player like Javi Baez or Kyle Schwarber in that deal, they have the right to demand that. And you're right. If they don't get that, I don't see why they would trade Chris Archer at this point to the Cubs. I think they can get better offers from just the farm system than what the Cubs can do. And, you know, it just doesn't seem like the Cubs are in a winning position on this unless there's a player on their big league roster that they really feel okay giving up that the Rays just happen to love. Like if the Rays are absolutely in love with either Albert Elmore or Ian Happ, and they think one of those guys is going to be a superstar and they would give up Archer for that guy, plus, you know, maybe a couple mid-level prospects, then yes, I think the Cubs could pull this off. But outside of that scenario, it just doesn't seem realistic.
Yeah. And that's, you know, when I look at, and again, we could look at things a variety of different ways, but I look at one of those, you know, Happ would seem the most likely to me because in Albert Almora, a guy who is supposed to be an elite center fielder and who could be again, I think he does, maybe he drops a few of those, he bulked up a little bit, maybe drops a few pounds, gets a little bit more range back. He's not really the guy that you profile as an ideal American League corner outfielder. They've already got Kevin Kiermaier patrolling center field in Tampa Bay. They don't really need, you know, Albert Almora is certainly not going to unseat him as the center fielder, and I don't know that they'd want him for left. Happ seems like that guy that a lot of people would go after. Now, on the flip side, and I don't want to change the direction, but you did ask who I thought was interesting, and you brought up Yelich. And I had said this a while back, you know, when it came out that, man, you know, the Marlins were looking at trading Stanton, which we obviously saw happen, and or Ozuna and Yelich. I mean, Yelich is kind of that guy who you slot him in there in center field. Maybe he can even lead off. He seems to check a few boxes that the Cubs could really use, and he fits those in such a way that you don't mind as much giving up some of that talent for, because he does immediately for them and check more boxes than what they do. So he's kind of that guy that seems to fit. Although, again, the Marlins can negotiate with a hell of a lot more teams than just the Cubs. And so it's not as if they're just sitting back, they're going to take the first offer they get either. So they could get a lot for Yelich. And I think they will if they choose to move him.
Yeah. I mean, just to throw out one specific team that I can think of off the top of my head, the Cardinals absolutely would love to make a move for Christian Yelich, and they have a much healthier farm system at this point. And the Marlins don't want a guy like Ian Happ, who, you know, has already been in the big leagues. I think they want guys who are a year or two away and, you know, are, you know, not going to be, you know, basically push off those arbitration years as long as possible. So if you're just looking at farm system, the Cardinals could easily outbid the Cubs on Yelich. So I don't know if there's necessarily a fit there with the Cubs unless we fall into this scenario again where they just are absolutely in love with some Cubs prospects that, you know, places like Baseball Prospectus and Baseball America are rating, you know, much lower than what the Marlins think.
Yeah, and that makes sense, you know, the Cards angle, because obviously, I mean, we saw it. The Marlins wanted to send Stanton to St. Louis. They wanted right to pluck some of those top pitching prospects. That would have been the ideal fit, and I think everyone recognized that. Everyone who did not live in St. Louis, I should say, recognized that that was never going to happen from Stanton's perspective. But my gosh, and you almost get the feeling like the Cardinals might be kind of, you know, they missed out on the big fish, pun intended, I guess. And so like they've already in their minds, they've already parted with those prospects because they were ready to give them up. Now I'm not saying they're just going to go give the same haul for somebody else like Yelich, but they've kind of mentally, you know, detached themselves from some of those guys, maybe to the point where, hey, they'd be willing to make a few deals. And I think we've seen that. I think they are itching to make deals. And so I think the Cardinals could get really active in that trade market and really get going. So they're going to be one to watch. It's going to be really interesting to see how they handle these next few days
Yeah,
and weeks.
and that deal that they had set up for Stanton, obviously the Marlins were never even trying to get top prospects or a huge haul for Stanton. They just wanted that contract paid. But Sandy Alcantara was the centerpiece of that deal. And I saw him pitch in 2016 in A-ball. And that guy is he's going to be a very good pitcher. It may be in a, as a high leverage reliever. The best comp I can make on him is how we felt about Carl Edwards Jr. in like 2013 or 2014. There were questions about whether he'd be a starter or a reliever long term. I think Alcantara has a better chance of being a starter. And when I saw him in A-ball, I think he was 20 at the time. He was hitting 97, 98, 99 in the seventh inning when he was already over 90 pitches. I mean, that was a 20-year-old, you know, going against guys who are maybe like a year out of high school. I mean, that's absurd. There is so much talent there, and you know, I wrote about it for Baseball Prospectus at the time. If anybody's truly interested, I'm sure you can find it on the Google. Yeah, I wrote about the stuff he had and some of the things that his manager was saying. I mean, he's an impressive pitcher. So, if the Cardinals were willing to move him for Christian Yelich, and I believe they should be, I could see a deal working out there. On to our third segment. I haven't seen any other questions pop up. So, you know, occasionally fans, if you're listening, you can, watch our Locked On at Locked On Cubs Twitter account. I'll post questions or allow fans to ask questions for the podcast, and we got one. This one comes from, I'm probably gonna mess this up, but Mike McElwee, and he says the Cubs can sign any one player purely for name pun value. Who you got?
So I know, and I think he already kind of beat me to the one, which was, although I don't know why they'd go back and sign him now, but Pierce Johnson is always a fun
Get
one
it. Yeah,
that he
that's a
brought
tough
up. And
one.
then my favorite, although I guess they could dip. So I'm going outside of the player, and I'm saying, you know, maybe you want to bring somebody into your organization as a coach, and you know, and we saw, we've seen some guys move from sport to sport. So I think it'd be neat for them to go and get. Jim Bob Cooter, maybe from the NFL ranks, if you get him
Right.
to maybe work, or Rusty Koontz, which I'm saying it that way, but if you see the name actually spelled out, it
Yeah.
looks much better from pun perspective than actually saying it.
Yeah, that's yeah, we don't want to go too far into that, but
Yeah.
I have two as well. Just one of my favorite baseball names, and I feel like it's pretty self-explanatory, is Charlie Furbush. I just really I like that name. That is a good name. If we're looking historically, and I don't know if yeah, how far back we're going to dig up players, and I mean that pun intended for this guy, but Cannonball Titcomb, he was a pitcher, a left-handed pitcher, which I think the Cubs need. He stood 5'6", 157 pounds, and his actual name was Liddell, but Liddell N. Titcomb. He Let's see, what are his stats? Career ERA of 3.47 in 62 starts, 528 innings. So you can do the math on the innings there. 30-29 one loss record. So, you know, the old school guy would say average pitcher. He pitched from 1886 to 1890. So I'm gonna guess he's not around anymore.
That's probably a safe bet.
But Yeah, he exceeded his rookie limits in the 1887 season.
He's now in his 165th ARB eligible year or whatever it would be at this point. My math is not
Yeah.
very strong, so.
I don't know how reliable WAR is from that era, but it says his career WAR is negative 3.4.
You would think
So,
it'd be higher for a guy nicknamed Cannonball, right? Wouldn't he have very good war, like really high war for Cannonball?
mean, you would think maybe he threw a pitch called the cannonball, where when somebody swung, it was like launching a cannonball.
Except he had to pitch frequently against Gatling Gun Jones and just didn't work out real well for him.
Right. He threw 197 innings in 1888 with a 2.24 ERA, only allowed four home runs. He allowed 16 home runs for his career, so I don't know why they would call him Cannonball. Who knows? So anyway, those are our picks for pun names. And I'm checking here. No, it doesn't seem like there's any other big rumors going on at the very moment. So I think we made it through. I'm hoping that this podcast can get out in the morning without Chris Archer having been dealt to the Cubs. That's my biggest goal.
I'm sure that'll probably happen. Generally, the karmic influence of the two of us, I think combined, should make some of these things happen.
Yeah, that's what I really want, I guess, is for everybody to listen to this podcast tomorrow in celebration of Chris Archer being dealt to the Cubs for Ian Happ, and have us talk about how that's just not a possibility. That would be perfect.
That fits really well with what we were saying earlier about credibility being tanked by saying something that isn't going to happen. So it would. I think it would be only fitting. So people already think I'm an idiot anyway. So let's just go ahead and make it happen, and then we can laugh all the way to the World Series.
Yes, embrace the stupid. That's a new Cubs Insider t-shirt.
That sounds good to me.
Patent pending. All right, Cubs fans, thank you for listening. This was episode two of Locked On Cubs. Thank you to Evan Altman for joining me. You can find him at Cubs Insider. Any other stuff you want to throw out?
I just if you want to follow on Twitter, it's at D Evan Altman, or you can also follow, if you'd prefer just the stick to sports version, you can check at Real Cubs Insider.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much again, and I'll see you guys next time.